We're going to talk about another area that needs balance in life. And I want to set it up by having you think about something that you do well. Now, you may or may not think you do something well. Some of you may know that you have a certain skill or skills that you've developed over time. Anybody have any hobbies that they're particularly proud of? When it's that opening, it's always dangerous, but I'm going to go ahead. Yes?
I'll go first since nobody can have a more embarrassing one than me. I like to collect and then dress up in Renaissance Festival attire.
He's not married.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I like Renaissance, so period. I've not dressed up in it. I just don't own any clothes. Like, okay. All right. And at that Renaissance fair, I'm not going to go very far down this road, but I do want to. What happens, just generally speaking, in a Renaissance?
Generally,
yeah. Any jousting?
With British accents, yes.
Okay.
Jousting.
All right.
Men have hawks on their wrists.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Any skills involved in that? Just verbal skill? And
if you know the lingo, that helps being able to haggle for a wooden cup.
All right. There you go. So you got to have skill.
Yes.
I appreciate that. I didn't expect it to come from that direction, but that's good. I don't know where we can even go from here. Any other hobbies or skills that may or may not be connected with Renaissance fairs? Nobody even wants to touch that. You're going, what can I have? What can even follow that up?
I'm a partner in a racing company.
Okay. All right. So, do you actually get behind the wheel, or?
Yeah, well, I drift.
Okay. Drift, as in drifting in the car, or?
Yeah,
oh, okay. It's a really cool thing to do if you can do it. I saw, what's those guys' name that have the on the fuel channel or whatever that do Lombardi Street and they drift.
Oh.
They have the little car. It's a really cool show. It takes a lot of skill for sure to do that. All right, so we got Renaissance fairs and drifting. Some guys going, I do woodworking, but I ain't telling nobody. You got any seamstresses in the room? Any seamstresses? Good, those that can sew in one art or the other, even cross stitch or in anything. You can see my ignorance. Okay, we have some hands up. All right, any woodworkers? Okay, good man. Appreciate you coming out with that. Anybody that was good at sports back in the day? All right. Okay. You may or may not be. I don't know. I'm not evaluating you.
Shooting.
All right. Huh?
Shooting.
All right. Yeah, so you think about it. It doesn't really matter. And really, this makes the point. It can be very diverse, one from the other. But how did you get good at it? How did it become a skill that you have continued to practice and get better at? Yeah, I pre-practice. Yeah, thank you. I stuck it in there. So you had to read things. You have to work at it. You, generally speaking, you have to put in the time and the effort. And if you stop, what happens? Some of you former athletes know it, the skills don't always stay there. The body doesn't always do what the mind says that it ought to do. And all of those things, you think about how you originally got good at it. You may have had a mentor, somebody who carried you along. Or it could have been you took classes, or maybe you searched it out on the internet, or maybe you did it DIY style. You just got there and just did it yourself, grunted and gritted through it. But it took some time and effort on your part in order to really drill down and to get better at that thing. Now, somehow we think that something that's so lifelong and in such need of our putting effort into it, that marriage is somehow different from all of that. That we can just somehow coast by and have marriages that are strong and healthy and close without putting in that sweat equity. Dennis Rainey is the author, and this is another one of those resources. I'm going to try to give you a bunch before the weekend is over. A lot of these are light reads. They're very easy to pour through. But Dennis and Barbara Rainey together wrote a book, and Kathy originally found this resource, and it was a very valuable one. It's called Staying Close. Staying Close. Now, he shares a statistic that is mind-boggling. He says he believes that 95% of all marriages suffer from isolation, and few realize how desperately alone they really are. Here's what he says. Often a husband and wife begin drifting apart so slowly that they hardly recognize that it's happening. And then after a few years of hiding and poor communication, they realize that their once romantic love life has grown stale. That's why many successful-looking marriages aren't much more than two successful people independently doing their own thing. They are not friends, and they are not life partners. Now, 95% is a staggering number. I'd like to believe that it's not that high. But it causes me to ask the question, is that what God intended for marriage? To be lonely isolation? I don't think so. I think you go back to the creation, you see what God wanted marriage to be. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, you remember God parades the animals before Adam and he didn't find his helper among them. And then he puts Adam to sleep. And as a part of that, what does God say about Adam's status? It's not good what? It's not good for man to be alone. And so I will make him a helper suitable for him. What God is saying is, here you are already in isolation. I don't want that to be the issue. I want you to have this closeness, this intimacy with another human being of the pinnacle, the crown of my creation. It's going to be so much different from you, but complementary to you. You're going to think, you're going to approach life differently. You're going to come from such different approaches from a psychological level, even to some degree on an emotional and physical level. And yet, you're going to come together and you're going to be close. But you got to work on it. It doesn't automatically happen. Whether it's isolation or indifference or any other underlying factor, we pay for not putting in the work that we need to. It's going to take dedication for God and His Word if His will is going to be at the center of our marriage. So what I want to do is deal with distractions. I want to include the ones that are mentioned, but show that how they're all kind of interwoven together. And to do that, I want us to look in a few directions. I'm going to ask some questions. The first one is, what distracts us and keeps us from keeping balance in our marriage? And keep in mind what this one is about. What distracts us and keeps us from having balance in our marriage? All right, so I want you to build this list because if we don't deal with it in this lesson, we're going to come back and deal with it. Kids. Work. Schedules. Did anybody come look at my notes? All right, schedules. Others, our other relationships, other people. Family, technology. Social media. Oh, hey, y'all slow down. If somebody's taking notes, they can't keep up with all that. Every one of those is good. You need every one of those down. They're all right. After social media, somebody was saying something next. Hobbies. Even Renaissance Fair. I mean, it could become a problem. All right. Just keep that in mind. So you have a big list, right? A lot of things that can cause those kinds of distractions. Now, let me deal with some of them you've already dealt with. Number one is crowded calendars. Now, what can crowd our calendars and keep us from working on that closeness that needs to exist in a marriage? I mean, what are some specific things? What are some specific things that crowd up our calendars? And it may certainly deal with that. Okay, so if that's work, work can do that, right? Yeah, that's for y'all it would be. Would
work.
All right, work. So work and work, all right?
Commuting?
No, I think she said church activities.
Yes, she did, yeah. And, hey, if you're not in ministry, it still can be church activities if they're not kept in balance, for sure. Our wants, absolutely. The things that we desire and that are selfish in their nature, if we talk about wants, it can be. Kids' activities. Somebody, whoever said that, that's right. Somebody else said something over here.
Sports season.
Oh, man. You just went to meddling there, didn't you? Oh, that's not in my notes anywhere. No, I was kidding. It is, actually. And I love sports, if you hadn't heard me, I'll tell that out. All right, so here we go. Kids' activities. Civic involvement. Meetings for work. Social obligations. Frantic racing from one thing to the next. Time with extended family. Outside hobbies and interests. You know what all those have in common? There's not anything wrong with those things inherently, are there? They're legitimate. They're fine. We're going to say more about this tomorrow, but this easily undermines social balance in our marriage. Another one, stubborn secrets. Whether bad habits or unwholesome relationships or past sins or present struggles or future fears. Secrets build walls that keep couples out. Because here's what's happening. That secret, whatever it is that you're keeping and not sharing, what it does is it drains the energy and the effort that's necessary for you to work hard on your marriage. So we're so often trying to manage this thing we don't want to be known, whatever it is, that's what we're working on and not on the marriage. Another one, and this is at the heart of what we're talking about. Spellbinding secrets. You ever seen something like this happen before? How about everywhere, every day, all the time, wherever we go? It's amazing. You sit in an airport and conduct a social experiment. And it doesn't have to be that, but it seems like that's a place, right? And it seems like you never see anybody's eyeballs anymore. Even if you're the lady up or the man up front trying to take the airline the ticket. Of course, you have to because the pass is on the phone. They put that down. Then you see them and that's it. You know, it goes back. So I'm kind of in that in-between generation. I have a smartphone and I had a computer for most of my ministry life. And some of those things came along and I try to utilize, incorporate that technology into my life. Some of you I'm looking at are digital natives. You've not known a world without that. And my generation did not do as well as the generation before me at what I'm about to say, but we've got to be careful that it doesn't continue to erode. Back in the old days when you had a couple over and you began to visit with them, maybe didn't know them very well, and somewhere along the line, it's going to be inevitable. You're going to run out of things to say. Or perhaps there's a lull in the activities. So what do you do in that moment? You have some discomfort. You're trying to work through that complex interchange of ideas and relationship building. And you work through that. Maybe you play a card game or maybe you do something like that. And everybody begins to interact again. You know what can happen these days? If there's any kind of lull in the activities or the conversation. And I'm not condemning. I'm just saying it's observable. Right? I was in Papados in Dallas-Fort Worth Airport last fall. And it was so cool. There was this, I was sitting there by myself waiting for my next flight, and there's this man and wife and came into the airport, and it seems, or at least they were a couple. She was excited. They were arm in arm. They were going on some great trip. You surmise all this stuff. And they go and they sit at the table together. And she's talking and chatting. And as soon as he sits down, it's like Pavlov's dog. He pulls out his phone, and I'm sitting where I can see the back of him. And he's got it open to Facebook. And he's just mindlessly trolling. Now, she's a persistent woman. And she continues to try and converse for several minutes, but he's persistent too. There's very little interaction. Occasionally a monosyllabic grunt here and there. That was it. He never looked up from that phone except for momentarily to give the waiter his order. And then he went back. So after what looked like several minutes, she finally gave up. She pulled out her phone. And they spent the rest of their time together face down in that phone. Now I want you to step back for a moment and think about it. As you envision your relationship, if God blesses you and you begin to work on some of the principles and build on the principles that you continue to study and see in God's Word, your marriage may be decades long. Do you envision your relationship together as one long? Now, if you're a little older, and maybe you're going, amen, brother, preach on. It started with a big screen, didn't it? Maybe this is learned behavior to some degree. Because Pavlov's dog in the old days had a lot bigger screen. And he'd sit down in the easy chair and either had his son to go up and change the channels for him, or they even got one of these remote controls, you know. And he did it from the comfort of his lazy boy. And the entire relationship can be lived out. You think, I don't want decades worth of screen time. But what is marriage? But it's a life spent together that's lived out day by day. And moment by moment. And there is no self-righteousness because it seems to me to be almost a universal thing that we're doing with this. This is a great tool. It's a wonderful tool. It makes our life so much easier, but so often it becomes a distraction. And as a result of this, we find ourselves with that spellbinding screen. And we're neglecting the relationship right in front of us. And sometimes the phenomenon is that here we are, and we're in a conversation with somebody, and our phone buzzes. Who is it? I don't know. But it's somebody not here. They're somewhere else, right? Do they know that you got buzzed? And you have to answer it right then. But what's happening right in front of you is somebody that you could be interacting with in real time, in real life. And then when you have a moment later, you can respond to that text or that inbox message, whatever it is. Now that's general rules for etiquette in society. But husbands and wives so often have that spellbinding screen that keeps them from connecting with one another. See, when we're talking about balancing, I'm not one to say, I don't know. I don't know what that arbitrary line is. But what you maybe need to do is keep a log of how much time is spent doing that. And it'll give you an idea of whether or not there's balance. Because if that number is a very long number and all the other numbers are short numbers, then maybe you need to work on some of those areas and a little less on building your social network. All right, so now I stopped preaching and started meddling a little bit. Number four, a polarity in parenting philosophy can be that which distracts us in our marriage. This happens if one or both of the parents are distracted from their job, and I can see time's against me, so I'll deal with that and some other things. Constant conflict. What can keep us from fighting for our marriage is fighting with each other. And remember, I've already said this and I'll say it again. Conflict is inevitable since we're two individuals with two minds, but repeated battles and disagreement can form a wedge that prevents intimacy. And really all of this is pointing back to that. And then obsession with occupation. See, this is where we get into our time. We may be working so hard at working that it impacts the work that we should be doing on our marriage. We can get caught up in the drama and the demands and the dreams that we have that's connected to that we don't have time for each other in the marriage. So how do you know when you're working too much on your work and not enough on your marriage? Are there some tangible ways you can measure that? All right, so what are they? How do you know if you're working too much at your work? Okay, audible complaints. That's a pretty good cue, all right? And by the way, I love the very self-deprecating way that that's done. Not one does. She owned it for herself. That's good. Not herself, but another lady. Right. So, all right, what else?
Send them an email?
Or a text? Or post on Facebook and tag them in it. There you go. That'll get their attention if they're on Facebook. All right. How do you know if you're working hard at work? I'm getting lost in some of y'all's answers. So, it was if they complain about it. What else?
When you let work interfere with other time that you're supposed to dedicate it to, like, your spouse and kids.
Okay. So what's the last thing you said?
When it bleeds over.
And actually, that happens in more than one way, doesn't it? What about if you are physically at home, but mentally or psychologically at work? That can be one. All right, so that's one way it bleeds over. What are some other ways that you can tell that you're working too hard at your work?
You're out of touch with what's happening. You really don't know what's going on.
All right, you're out of the loop. So if you're not there participating, you're not apt to know what's going on there. What else? Let me give you a few things that may be good litmus tests. Huh? Okay, that's right. There was an old song out there that I forget how it went. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. You know, I thought it used to be a romantic song. I listened to the words. It makes the heart fonder for somebody else. That's how the rest of that goes. So that can be a very flashing red emergency sign. When work interferes with important family activities, somebody touched on that, such as dinner and bedtime rituals, and one spouse is being left with the evening the responsibilities most of the time, if not all the time. When you can't count on being home at a predictable time, it's a pretty good indicator. When your work interferes with a big marital event, like a birthday or an anniversary. And again, as we said, when you're physically at home and mentally or psychologically at work. Now, the next one's a little akin to that, and that is what I call time traveling. Some marriage partners act as though they're single without the emotional and time commitments to a spouse that come along with marriage. And it could be business trips, hunting, fishing, ball game trips, personal vacations without your spouse, all day shopping. Now, listen, and what I'm saying here is there's a difference between the inevitable and the exceptional, and the unending and the huge, the rule. Self-service. A lot of spouses can't properly prioritize their marriage because of selfishness. They're always tuned in to WIIFM. What's in it for me? Their favorite song is by Janet Jackson. What have you done for me lately? We wait for our spouse to go first so often. We wait for them to take the first step, for them to do for us. I can't be exhaustive and cover everything that keeps us from keeping proper balance in time and media and other distractions that keep us from plugging in and giving balance to our marriage. But the things that I mentioned are enough to create quite a challenge for a healthy marriage. And all of these things have one thing in common. They're basically reinvestments away from our marriage relationship into something else that keep us from plugging into our spouse. They rob us of the resources that we need to work hard in building up our marriages. And we lose sight of what God intended for marriage when He said in Mark chapter 10 and verse 9, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And that man sometimes can be us in our own marriage relationships. You see, a bank has guards for its money. And each of us as spouses must guard and protect what's the core of our marriage. And that's love. All right, so having said that, what will it take for us to keep properly balanced in our marriage? And I want to say this up front. Just thinking that it'll get better by itself or hoping or wishing that time will take care of it is wrong. You think about all those things that you got good at, all those skills that you developed. Is that how you maintain that? You see, you can't wish or hope or think that in enough time that communication, that closeness issue is going to automatically resolve itself because it won't. Slim Whitman. My parents maybe listen to that. I don't know if anybody in the room knows who Slim Whitman is. But he wrote a song, or at least he sang a song, in which he said, I wish upon wishes, somehow it could be, that wishes could bring your sweet love back to me. If wishes could change it, you'd be by my side. If wishes were horses, then beggars would ride. Now, nobody rides horses anymore, but back then that was a big thing. I'd like to wish myself that even beggars could ride on a horse. In our marriage relationships, wishing is not the way to get this resolved, and hoping. So here's what you can do. Keep a log of your hours for a period of time. How are you spending your time? How are you spending your time in your relationship? If you're concerned about your time away from your marriage or what you're doing with your time in the marriage, then quantify it. Now, let me make a very important note. And if you are taking notes, please underline this. Don't keep a log of your spouse's activities. That's not the point of this. That's going to seem like supervising. It's going to be counterproductive. If you find that you're overscheduling or you're settling into a pattern of investing your time elsewhere, then adjust it. Make the needed changes. Let your spouse know about trips and meetings that you turn down and why you're doing that. Your spouse is going to appreciate that and encourage you for it. So keep a log. Number two, plan marital time. Don't expect your schedule to just magically produce more time for you. It's not going to happen. Come up with daily, weekly, and monthly rituals that bring you together. All right, so positive time. You guys have any marital rituals, things you do together as a couple that help to bring you together and to refocus you on your marriage? I mean, it had to be big dramatic stuff. Do you have routines that you don't mind sharing?
Monday movie night.
Monday movie night. Okay. All right. That's a good one. You want to build the whole thing on movie nights because that's a big screen, but that's a good thing. It's something you look forward to. It's time together. There's some excitement around that. All right. What else?
Saturday morning breakfast.
With
no
With no phone. All right, hey, there you go. That's something to write down. Put the with no phone on there. That's good. Because then there's no distractions. All right. Anything else?
Everything.
Okay, good. We're done. All right, everything. That's right. Well, and there comes a point in time when you can do more together. That's right. All right, so build your rituals. I don't know what they are. Now, it's biblical for, in my mind, it's biblical for me to give Kathy coffee every morning. Y'all know that, right? He brews. So I make the coffee, and I'm a morning riser. Kathy doesn't rise. She rises early, but not quite as early as me. And so I drink my coffee, and I go and take her a cup, and I greet her into the day. You find it's little things. It's not necessarily big things. Some other things that you could add to this are going on walks together, right? It's good for your body. It's time together. And what happens a lot of times when you're on those walks? You catch up with the day. You talk. All right. A long breakfast one morning and then hanging out. Shopping. Ball games. Huh? All right. Thrift stores, antique stores. If you must, there you go. So plan time together. Find things that your mate likes to do and take some time to do that. All right, number three, when other demands eat into your marital time, remind yourself of what you're missing and tell your spouse how bad you feel about that. Now, again, it can be empty and hollow if you're not making adjustments, but when you cannot honor an obligation on those occasions, let them know. Because a lot of times there's resentment built up because there's not an apology extended. Number four, use the time that you do have better. Most of us are not using the full potential of the limited time we have, so better time management and small changes in your schedule can make all the difference. Always be looking for ways to improve your time management. Number five, if you're the one who wants more time, avoid nagging about spending more time together. May I suggest you bring up your concerns periodically and at a calm moment. Express it as a hope rather than as a criticism. All right? If you're the one distancing yourself, ask yourself what you hope for in your marriage and what will it take to fulfill those hopes. Think proactively rather than defensively about finding time, more time for your marriage. All right, so what happens if none of these things work? You've gone through all these steps, you've tried to re-examine, and you're still in the same place. What do you do? Here's what it may mean. It may mean a major shift in career. It may mean a major shift in hobbies or whatever it is that's taking time away from your spouse. Because, you know, I don't know if you heard this, but I heard this growing up, that marriage is the second most important decision that you'll ever make. The first one, of course, is the commitment we make to Christ in our lives. And marriage, we symbolize that with so much pomp and circumstance as I think we should. But then so often we let all these other things take precedence over that which should go before our career, which should certainly go before our hobbies and anything else. And so if there's a problem with us resolving the time issue, then we need to look at those other areas and ask those hard questions and try to get to the very bottom of that so that we spend more time with our mate. When you got married, you probably had wedding vows, right? And in the middle of those wedding vows was something like forsaking all others. That might mean forsaking what's draining your time and what's draining your mind. It's not only a sexual affair that can threaten our marriage, it can be a time affair as well. So what happens when you restore or maintain balance in the time in your marriage? Let me suggest this in the time that we have left. Number one, you will feel better about your marriage. It's that old principle that we've already talked about in investing, that the more you put in, the more you get out of marriage. Now, here are some investments that you can make that will make an almost immediate and tangible dividend in your marriage. Number one, establish a set time to talk every day. And this is just check-in talk. This is not the talk about money or the talk about children or the talk about chores. This is just husband and wife talk time. So establish a time every day for that. It may not be the same time, but make sure it's a priority. Number two, if you've stopped going to bed together regularly, start again. This is from First Pollard chapter 1, but you might see some wisdom in that if you try it. Number 3, leave an affectionate note for your spouse that has no practical purpose, like don't forget my dry cleaning or make sure that the kids get to the ball practice. But just do that just for no reason. It may even be through email or it may be through a text, but communicate it to them. Number 4, start dating again. Go out on a spontaneous date or plan one right now. Number 5, spend more quiet time together without the TV on or the computer or the phone. Number 6, notice something that you like about your spouse and tell them. Number 7, have or rediscover your own special stuff. You guys have special stuff together? You got a song? Do you have your song or your songs? Maybe you have a special greeting, something that you say that means something only to you. Do you have some secret that's just your little secret? I want to tell you mine, but I'm not going to. But we should have them. All right, so you'll feel better about your marriage if you invest in your time more wisely. Number 2, you will create greater intimacy in your marriage. You've probably heard about the exasperated wife that went to the counselor and was ready to give up on her marriage, right? You've heard about that. And the counselor gave her the advice that he did, that she go home. And she really wants to get his goat and really just make him sorry and to be hurt and to be wounded. For the next month to go home and to just be as nice as she could to him and cook just as what he likes to eat and just tell him how good looking he is. And to do that for a month, she'll create such a dependency that when she goes to file the papers, boom, she'll hit him. So you know what happens right at the end of the month. She goes back and he says, all right, you ready for me to give you the name of my lawyer friend and file divorce? And she goes, divorce? I love him more than I ever have. You see, that's that whole investment principle again, isn't it? She began to put her time and her effort away from the distractions and more into him, and it paid that dividend. You'll also be strengthening the foundation beneath your marriage. What do you do when you find cracks in the literal foundation of your home? You probably get pretty scared about it. That's a big deal. So we need to work on the cracks that can show up in the foundation of our marriage. You know, when both of you prioritize and work hard in your marriage, wonderful things happen. It's not pure instinct, is it, that we do what we should to prioritize our marriage and not let time or any other distraction stand in the way of it? It's interesting to me that God had to command wives to love their husbands. If it was just pure instinct, why would Titus 2, 4, and 5 say that the older women are to tell the young women to love their husbands? And if it was pure instinct for the man, then why would Peter say what he says to men in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, live with your wives in an understanding way and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life? See, these things aren't by instinct. We don't stay close just because we are. We have to work at it. I'm going to do something I don't do hardly ever at all. I'm going to close a lesson by quoting Lou Holtz. It's kind of hard to even understand what the man is saying, but there was one time that he said this: winners embrace hard work. By the way, wives, if any of you need to know who Lou Holtz is, your husbands can tell you afterwards, or maybe a few wives need to tell their husband, I don't know. Winners embrace hard work. They love the discipline of it, the trade-off that they're making to win. Losers, on the other hand, see it as a punishment, and that's the difference. You got to work hard at removing those distractions. But maybe we'll let Solomon have the last word. Commit your works to the Lord, and all your plans will be established. Let's pray. God, it's exciting to see so many husbands and wives and men and women, even those who aren't married, who have taken the time to be here tonight because of their great interest in this, the oldest institution that you have created on this earth, an institution that's so unique because it is one to be enjoyed. It allows us to have the most fulfilling and wonderful relationship that we can have on this earth. We're so thankful that you've made us diverse and different from each other in so many ways, that you have created a means of us bringing two different people together in such a way that brings such joy and satisfaction. But we do realize, Father, that this requires great effort on our part, that we sometimes have to fight through some difficulties and challenges and problems. Help us to know that this is normal, but help us to be determined to work at removing the distractions that can keep us from having the balance in our marriage that needs to exist. Pray that you'll bless each and every man and woman represented here, that you will help them to be what you want them to be, that they will include in that being the right kind of spouse. Help us to honor you with our lives, O Father, and help us to try to do better day by day. So thankful for your grace. As we have received it so freely, help us to give grace to each other. Help us to sleep well tonight and to come back together tomorrow and try to be encouraged as we encourage one another. In Jesus' name, amen.